I just want to begin with this. I always like to tell people this whenever I talk about embryonic stem cell research. The first thing you should know and be able to tell people is that the church is not at all opposed to alleviating people's suffering, to getting rid of diseases, to helping people live longer. The church is certainly not opposed to scientific research. In fact, we developed the scientific method. So the church is all for that. And that should seem obvious enough in light of all of the charitable work that the church does worldwide. And yet, when we start talking about stem cells, you know, opponents of embryonic stem cell research, or excuse me, proponents of embryonic stem cell research will kind of say, well, don't you care about people suffering? And it's like, well, obviously we do. I mean, we've been doing this for 2,000 years more and better than everyone else. So obviously we care about people suffering. But it drives me nuts sometimes when people throw that at you. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a logical fallacy, and we're going to get into that. But so that's the first thing you should know in terms of apologetics being able to defend the church teaching is obviously we're all about that. So, but let's talk about what stem cells are, and we'll go through all of this. So in your body, there are two main types of cells, and there are those cells that turn into those cells that are called differentiated cells, and those are like muscle cells, skin cells, brain cells, whatever. Those are cells that serve a particular function, and they divide. All cells will divide to kind of replace themselves, but after they've divided so many times, they die out, and that's why they do need to replace themselves, right? But they can only turn into that which they already are, right? So skin cells divide and become more skin cells, and brain cells don't divide. but that's what I'm getting at. So most of those kinds of cells divide and divide frequently enough, but then they die, and once they die, they're dead, they don't come back. but so you have differentiated cells, and they divide so many times, and then they die out. They don't live very long, and that's why they replace themselves, right? And you have some cells that don't, like I said, don't divide and don't replace themselves, and that's why the whole issue of stem cells comes in. We're going to get to that in a minute. But then you have undifferentiated cells, right? And undifferentiated cells are what we call stem cells. That's the other word for them. And the cool thing about stem cells is that because they are undifferentiated, they can become anything. And the main place we would find undifferentiated cells is in an embryo. When an egg is fertilized by a sperm and it creates that one cell, because of course the egg and the sperm both contain half of the genetic DNA of the parent, right? Because we have 46 chromosomes, and so when the eggs and the sperm are created, each of them gets half of that, and so that's why when the egg and the sperm come together, you all of a sudden have a full cell of 46 chromosomes, 23 from the father, 23 from the mother, creating this brand new person that is neither father nor mother, right? It's a different set of cells, right? And in that first coming together of sperm and egg, and you have that fertilized egg, that's the beginning of what we would call embryo. I mean, that's when it first is an embryo. But that's the zygote, that one-celled embryo, right? And as that one-celled embryo begins to divide, what it divides into are stem cells, because then those cells turn into everything else in the body. Some of them will become your heart. Some of them become your brain. Some of them become your skin. Some of them become your liver. Some of them become every part of your body, right? So those are undifferentiated because they turn into, they have the potential of turning into anything else, right? So again, just to review so far, you have differentiated cells and undifferentiated cells, or called stem cells, right? And the reason why this is so cool and exciting, why this is such a big deal, is because when this was discovered, that these cells can turn into anything, the thought came up, well, wait a minute then, if these cells can turn into anything, couldn't we then use them to fix either genetic disorders or couldn't we use them to replace cells that have died out that need to be replaced? So like, for instance, when someone has a heart attack and the tissue in the heart literally dies, those cells die and therefore they're no longer dividing, couldn't we put stem cells in there and kind of coax them into turning into heart cells? Because if stem cells can turn into anything, maybe we could also put them in the brain when someone has brain damage and have them actually turn into brain cells, right? Because up to this point, when a brain cell was dead, it was dead. And brain cells don't redivide, they don't divide, right? So, I mean, you couldn't replace them. That's why brain damage is such a big problem, because if you experience brain damage, it's there forever. It's not going to be replaced. Now, fortunately, we don't use 100% of our brain, so it's not a big deal if you experience a little bit of brain damage, but if you experience it in the right place, or in the wrong place, rather. She's making all sorts of faces, right?
Isn't me all over.
I was going to say Sue is a victim of all sorts of right, so that's so far, right? The thought was, if we introduce these undifferentiated cells into an environment of differentiated cells, that we could get them to grow into that kind of cell, right? And this has happened so far. They've had some success in doing this, in getting these undifferentiated cells, when you put them, like for instance, when someone has suffered a heart attack and they have dead heart tissue, they've actually had some success in injecting into one's bloodstream these undifferentiated cells, hoping that they would then go to the heart and in the environment of heart tissue turn into heart tissue, right? Because that's the cool thing about them, is they can turn into anything, right? The controversy, of course, behind all of this is that how we get those cells, because the main way that people want to just get those cells, because it seems to be the easiest, is just to conceive all sorts of zygotes and allow them to grow for usually about 5 days. So after fertilization, they let it grow for about 5 days. And then at that point, it has enough of the undifferentiated cells, the stem cells, before it has actually begun to really turn into the differentiated cells, before it actually begins to develop the axes of the human body and that kind of thing. And this book actually goes into a lot of that, before it actually begins to develop a front and a back and a head and feet and arms and spinal cord and everything else, before that happens. So that's been the very easy way, and scientifically, you think about it, it is kind of easy to just have a sperm and an egg, to put them together in a petri dish, cause the fertilization, and allow it to grow for 5 days, and then to extract the stem cells, right? But of course, the problem is that you're also killing that person, right? Because and we talked about this before when we talked about when we talked about a few different topics. I was trying to think specifically which topic, but of course, that at fertilization, that's when this is a new person, right? That this is the earliest moment at which ensoulment can actually happen, when this new person actually receives their human soul, when they become a human being. And one of the things I talked about, I remember in the last class when we talked about end-of-life issues, is that, you know, the dignity that the human person has is an intrinsic dignity. It's part of simply being a human being. It's not something that's conferred later on once you, for instance, get certain abilities. It's not like you become a human being, or you get that dignity once you learn to walk, or once you can think, or once you can do this, or once you can do that. And some people out there in society would like to take that approach to justify both abortion and embryonic stem cell destruction, and also at the end of life issues, to justify things like euthanasia and whatever else. They say, well, you know, they're a vegetable now. Well, no, they're not a vegetable. You know, we use persistent vegetative state. They're still a human being. They might not be able to talk or think or whatever else, but they're still a human being. They still have that dignity. And at the other end of the spectrum, that's true as well. The fact that this one-celled zygote can't yet think or talk or walk or reason or whatever else, that's irrelevant. The fact is that they belong to this species which is able to do that. and the fact that they happen to be at the very beginning of that spectrum of life, they're still a human being, even when they are that one-celled zygote. When that sperm hits the egg and they're fertilized, there is a dignity there just by being a human being. And that dignity has to be respected and cannot be violated. And also the other thing about being a human being, of course, is that, you know, you can't be used as a means to another end. Same reason why something like prostitution is wrong. You can't use a human being for your own good. Even in the case of, some people say, well, imagine how much good could come. Imagine how many people could be cured of all sorts of different diseases. Okay, fine, but even if you could cure a million people, does that ever justify killing one person? You know, if you could cure the whole world, does that justify killing one person? And of course, the answer that a Catholic Christian would give is absolutely not. You know, nothing justifies, you know, violating that human dignity. Nothing justifies that. Even if the entire world could be cured of every possible disease that ails them, that still doesn't justify killing one person, right? So that's where the whole controversy comes in about embryonic stem cell research, is because what this research entails is causing this new human being to be created, fertilizing an egg with a sperm, allowing it to grow for 5 days, and then killing it and extracting its cells, right? So that's where the immorality comes in here. But this is the good news, is that there are all sorts of other ways that have actually proven to be much more scientifically successful to get stem cells, right? Perhaps you've heard of adult stem cells. There are other places where we can get stem cells, and science, I mean, this is very cutting edge. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's changing every day. But they're able now to get stem cells from, I believe, bone marrow. They're able to get it from the umbilical cord right at birth, which is why you might be familiar, those of you who've had new babies born in your families or extended families recently, they have these kits now that they'll mail. My sister did this when she delivered her baby. You have to order this in advance, but they mail you this box that they say, like, bring with you to the hospital when you have your baby. And you give it to the doctor, and doctors know how to do this now because this has been going on for at least a year or so. But basically, it's this entire kit that right after the baby is born and they cut the umbilical cord, they have this whole kit of basically collecting the umbilical cord and sealing it in this, you know, completely sterile environment and protecting it and keeping it frozen or whatever else. Anyways, then it gets shipped off, and they're actually able to store your the stem cells from the umbilical cord. So like when my niece was born, as soon as that umbilical cord was cut off, they were able to wrap it up and put it in this thing and basically then put it in the mail, and it gets stored at this bank now, so God forbid anything should ever happen to my niece, any kind of genetic disorder or anything else that comes on along the way, they have stem cells for her on file. You know what I mean?
Doctors call it a doggy bag.
Right. That's the thing. And that's a good point. I'm glad you asked that, because the thing with stem cells is that in order for them to work, in order for your body not to reject them, like I said before, if you have a heart attack and you have dead heart tissue, we can inject stem cells into your bloodstream and have them go to your heart and rebuild. It needs to be your stem cells, right? And so the main approach that people have in getting stem cells is this, and this is one of the things I was going to get into. I'll just talk about this now, I might as well, but basically the approach that they take is they clone you to make your own stem cells. And what they do is this. This is a very interesting thing, and it becomes even more immoral. But what they do is, so like, let's say one of you has some problem and they want to try to cure this with stem cells. What they would do is they take a swab, usually of the inside of your cheek, but it can be any of your cells. But basically what they do is they take a cell from your body, right? And each cell has, like, the nuclear material in the beginning, in the middle, the nucleus, right? It has the nuclear material, has the 46 chromosomes. So there's that part of the cell, and then there's, like, everything else in the cell. There's the cell wall, there's the other stuff that makes up the cell, right? But there's, so there are those two main parts of the cell. And let me find that proper word for you. The rest of the cell is called the cytoplasm, right? So you have the nucleus and you have the cytoplasm. Karen, let me try to spell it. C-Y-T-O-P-L-A-S. Cytoplasm. So think of it this way. Each cell has the nucleus, which is the important stuff, the 46 chromosomes, or in the case of a sperm or egg cell, 23 chromosomes. But each cell has the nucleus, which has the chromosomes, and then the cytoplasm, which is everything else, right? So what they do, if they want to make stem cells of you, they get one of your cheek cells, and then they take an egg from a woman, any woman, doesn't matter. They take an egg from a woman, they take out the nucleus of the egg. They take out the chromosomes from the egg, so they just have the cytoplasm left. So they just have the egg, the rest of the egg, basically an empty egg, right? And then they take one of your cheek cells, they take the chromosomes out of the cheek cell, discard the rest of that cell, put those chromosomes into the egg, and then, this is really interesting, they use an electrical shock, and that actually causes the egg to think that it's been fertilized by a sperm, and all of a sudden it grows. And that's how you clone someone. That's what you do, because all of a sudden now you have this egg with 46 chromosomes in it, right? Because every other cell in your body has 46 chromosomes, right? The sperm cells and egg cells have 23, but every other cell in your body has 46. So they take an egg, which is what would normally have 23, get fertilized by a sperm that has 23, and at fertilization it has 46 and it begins to grow into a person, right? They take the egg, they carve out the inside, they put in the 46 from whatever other skin cell they got in your body or whatever cell, and they shock it. And this is again very cutting edge. They don't even know exactly how this works or why this works, but basically that's how you clone someone. And remember when they cloned Dolly, the sheep, back in 97 or something? That was the first time any creature had been successfully cloned, and they actually cloned that sheep that doing that exact thing. They took an egg cell, I think it was one of her own egg cells, but in theory it could have been any sheep's egg cell, and you carve out the nucleus and you put into it the nucleus from another cell. So now it's essentially a fertilized egg, and it begins to grow into a new sheep, right? So that's what they would do. If they wanted stem cells for you that your body would not reject because they're your own stem cells, they would take an egg from, again, any woman. And this is part of the problem, too, is that one of the things that moral theologians have kind of pointed out is, oh, by the way, you do this enough and you're going to end up basically exploiting women even further and turning them into egg factories. Exploiting women even further. I mean, how much money would go for, you know, an egg? And in fact, this is something else that this book pointed out that I thought I found very interesting, was you can actually buy eggs, human eggs, on the internet for $10,000 and get this, eggs from women who graduated from an Ivy League university are even more expensive. I mean, and think about this, but it works the other way too. I mean, when you go to a if you were to go to a sperm bank, it works the same way. They'll give you a book with, like, characteristics. Well, what kind of kid do you want? This guy, you know, look, he was blonde hair, blue-eyed, muscular, real smart, and this guy was, like, a homeless man who, you know, whose sperm do you want, you know? You're going to pay more for this guy's sperm, right? I mean, so, I mean, I don't want to be crass, but I mean, that's the type of exploitation that's going to happen with human beings if this would be allowed to continue. So basically, that's how they make your stem cells. They take an egg, a human egg, from any human female, and they carve out the nucleus, they put in the nucleus from one of your cells, they shock it, and now you have a clone. And that thing has a soul, because as soon as you have that egg with 46 chromosomes and it comes to life, I mean, really, that's what they're doing. They're playing God in a very real sense. It grows. And if you were to implant that into a woman's uterus, it would grow into your clone. It would be your identical twin, except 20, 30 years younger than you. But what they do is they don't do that. They don't implant it into a uterus and allow it to grow. They let it live in a petri dish for about 5 days until it has enough stem cells, and they kill it. And then they take those stem cells, and now we have stem cells that match you, that your body won't reject, right? So obviously I think it's very clear to see why this is so immoral. But this is the other thing I was getting at before, was there are some exciting new things with stem cells now, because there are some other ways of getting stem cells, like I said, that don't involve cloning. But the cloning is the main way that they do it now. So some of those other ways, like I mentioned with my niece, you know, they can get them at birth with the umbilical cord. But again, that has to be done right away. And it only works for that person, right? But there are other ways they can get them, and they're still trying to figure, I mean, this is very cutting-edge science, but they're looking at getting them from bone marrow, from other parts of, from other things. The other big thing that I want to mention, too, is something that has been very successful, and I'll kind of wrap up with this, something that's been very successful in terms of getting new stem cells, which has no moral qualms about it, is they can actually, they're working now on taking regular cells, adult cells, in your own body, and actually getting them to devolve into the stem cells that they once were, in a sense. So, some other vocab that I should probably just introduce real quick when we talk about these cells. Remember, I talked about differentiated cells and undifferentiated cells, or stem cells, right? Differentiated cells have a specific ability, a specific, they're able to just be that one thing. Heart cell becomes another heart cell, right? Now, an undifferentiated cell is what we call pluripotent or totipotent. And the word potent means power or ability, and pluri means plural, like many, and toti means all, right? So a stem cell is totipotent in the sense that it can become anything. That one stem cell can turn into brain, it can turn into a foot, it can turn into anything, right? Whereas the differentiated cone term is one thing, right? Now, one of the things that they introduced this other phrase here, which is kind of in the middle, which is multipotent. They've been able to take certain cells from your body and kind of devolve them into an earlier state, where they are not completely totipotent, they're not able to become anything, but they're able to become many things, many other things. And that's why we use the word multipotent as opposed to totipotent or simply differentiated, which cannot become anything else except for what it already is. And that's the word that they use, and they've had some success in even getting pluripotent cells from adult cells, from devolving them. And one of the words that they use is induced cells, induced multipotent or induced pluripotent cells, which means basically that they've been able to take a cell and kind of devolve it back into an earlier state, so that it could become something else, so that it could essentially be a stem cell, it could function as a stem cell.
They must have
what?
Unproven evolution. If they can devolve, they can evolve.
Right, well, devolving, yeah. basically what they do, I want to make sure I get my, they're able to take a differentiated cell and the word that it's using here is reprogram it, basically, into what is a stem cell. Now, obviously, that doesn't have any moral implications attached to it because there's no new life being involved here. if I take one of your cells and just get it to go back to an earlier state, there's no new life being created, there's no soul, it's just a cell, right? Whereas if I clone you, we're talking about a new person, we're talking about a new human being, a new soul. Interestingly enough, what's proven to be more scientifically doable is, and easier now, is doing this induced multipotent or pluripotent cell, where they're able to, that's actually, in terms of what's being done right now, in terms of clinical research, that's been the more successful of the two. And this is where you can really see the devil kind of working in the world, is that although this is the more successful of the two, and the two meaning the other one being cloning people and creating embryos and letting them live for 5 days and destroying them and getting out the stem cells, that's the one way. And the other way is getting your regular cells to kind of devolve into an earlier state, right? Of these two ways of getting undifferentiated stem cells, this one that is completely free of moral qualms, this one that is proving already to be more successful is the one that is not receiving the federal funding, at least not as much, and the one that we keep throwing money at are the embryonic stem cell destruction and research. This book that I'll give you has a little update because it was originally published before Obama was elected, and right after he was elected, they put in an update about, I'll let you read it for yourself, but basically it was just a few weeks after his inauguration that he lifted, and you might remember this, he lifted the restriction that Bush had put on the embryonic stem cell research. He lifted that, and not only that, he's been throwing more money by executive order at the embryonic stem cell research, which again requires creating human beings and destroying them. And what's so demonic about this, and I'm not suggesting that Obama, I'm not one of those far right-wing people who is suggesting that Obama is the devil incarnate or that he's possessed by a demon or that he's a Muslim or whatever else, but you can definitely see the devil working in all of this. The fact that the one that is less successful and the one that is more morally objectionable is the one that's getting funded and the one that people want to, you know, this other method, which is no moral qualms and scientifically doing better, we're not funding that. So that's its own kind of qualm. So I think I've said enough about all that. The only last thing I'll say is the whole point here is the dignity of the human being. And like I said this before, I mean, we can never justify killing a single person, no matter how much good that could do. And some people, one of the big things they want to do now is, you know, with IVF, in vitro fertilization, you have couples who are struggling with fertility, and the approach that they take is, well, let's go do IVF, and I've mentioned this before, we need to do perhaps a whole class on IVF. What they do is they take egg cells from the woman and they take sperm cells from the guy and they join them all together and basically fertilize. They usually do about 20 at a time, so they'll fertilize about 20 eggs. So all of a sudden you have 20 children now on ice. And then they implant about 5 at a time to see if any of them catch, right? And one of two things happen. Either they all catch, and now you have 5 babies growing inside of you, and then they have to do selective termination, which is abortion, because obviously you can't have 5 children growing inside of you unless you're willing to have 5 children grow inside of you and give birth to quintuplets. But they'll do that. They'll implant 5. Oh, and look, all 5 caught. Wow, well, let's get rid of these other 4 that don't look as good. This one looks really good. Let's get rid of these other 4. So we kill off 4. But now, what about those other 15 that are still on ice? Well, they go into this bank, and now science wants to use those to get stem cells. And one of the approaches that science will use, and again, you see the devil working in here, is scientists will say, well, you know, the couple that used IVF to have a kid, they got their kid, they still have 15 embryos on ice, they're not going to use them, no one else is going to use them, why don't we use them for scientific research? They're going to be discarded and killed anyways, why don't we use them? And the priest who wrote this book, Dominican priest, very smart guy, he kind of uses an analogy with a children's cancer hospital, and he says, you know, he gives this reference to this children's cancer hospital up in New York and says, look, all the children at that hospital are terminally ill and are going to die. And I don't think anyone would suggest that, well, they're going to die anyways, let's just kill them sooner so that we can use their live organs before they die. Why wait for them to die to get their live organs? Let's just, you know, they're going to die anyways. That's basically what we're saying about these IVF things, that, you know, well, you have these 15 kids on ice, they're going to die eventually. Why not harvest their stem cells? Now, the other thing that happens, by the way, with IVF is they, like I said, they implant, they fertilize the 20 eggs, and they implant 5 at a time, and none of them ever catch, because there's just another different fertility issue. Maybe the woman's uterus is not able to, you know, bond with the embryo. Anyways, so then you have, now you've conceived 20 children, and now they're all dead, you know. So there's just all sorts of evils with IVF. But that's one of the, that was the big thing that Bush tried doing. Remember when he got on, it was August, it was actually right before September 11th. It was August of 01 when he got on TV and basically had made the decision that we were no longer going to fund research of new embryos, meaning we weren't going to use federal funding to fertilize new eggs and let them grow and steal their stem cells. But he said we would still fund research for those embryos that were already conceived. But again, the Catholic position was that's not good enough, because you're still killing those embryos to get their cells. And not only that, you're still using that person as an end and not, excuse me, as a means and not an end, right? Because the human being can never be used as an end, excuse me, as a means. We can only ever be used as an end in ourselves, right? So that's all I'll say. This book is very good. Questions?